All right, Josh, I know we have a lot of creators that listen to our show, and I want to tell them about my favorite creator award show, The Streamies.
Yes, that is a great idea. The Streamies are awesome. They celebrate the best in online video in over 45 categories. And I know Jelly Smack is doing something really cool to help out creators who want to be considered for a Streamy this year.
You know, that's right. For the second year in a row, Jelly Smack is covering the submission fees for all creators. And here's a fun fact I'd love to share. Jelly Smack Creator Program partners grabbed a ton of awards at last year's ceremony. Entrepreneur and philanthropist Jimmy Donaldson, aka Mr. Beast, took home the top award of Creator of the Year, and Yes Theory won First Person Creator.
So what should our listeners do if they want to submit?
Josh, I think you know, but I'll say it anyway. Visit streamies.org/submissions. Entries are open now through August, so get on it.
Yes, that's right. Everybody, it's the Creator Event of the Year. You don't want to miss it, so head to streamies.org/submissions. This week on Creator Upload, one of Lauren's favorite creators joins her favorite social network. Is shopping on platforms a thing or not? Well, at least Shopify really wants it to be. And the creator liaison gets chosen from the outsiders.
Welcome to Creator Upload, your creator economy podcast. I am Lauren Schnipper.
And I'm Joshua Cohen. Lauren.
Yes.
One of your favorite, I think maybe all-time favorite creators, just joined your favorite social network.
God, am I supposed to guess? This is, yeah. You want me to guess?
Yes, I want you to guess.
My favorite creator?
Yeah, one of. Maybe, probably not the, but like one of.
Can you give me like a clue? So many, Josh. Could you give me like a hint?
Well, what's your favorite social network?
Do I have one?
Oh my God, Lauren.
This is too much pressure. I don't know. No, please.
Cameron Dallas is now on LinkedIn.
Oh, I did see this. Cameron Dallas joined LinkedIn. I did see that. And you were absolutely correct. Cameron Dallas, welcome to LinkedIn. I also saw last week or a week or two ago, Mindy Kaling joined, but I'm loving it. Did I tell you how Cameron Dallas like bombed a meeting I had with a startup? Because apparently he's like an investor in the startup. Did I tell you about this?
No, tell us about it though.
Oh my God. So I don't even remember.
We were going to play Lauren Schnipper, Cameron Dallas bingo, and you were going to tell us about how you saw him on your Hawaii trip. So I'm excited for a new
Cameron Dallas story. We're totally going to talk about that. I was at some startup that I guess he's involved in, and I'm meeting with the founders and they talk about Cameron Dallas and they're like, you know, do you know him? I'm like, yes, I know him. But of course I'm about to launch into how I ran into him in Hawaii after VidCon or something. And I'm like, I like the guy, but I'm like, you know, I knew him in the height of his, I don't want to say douchiness because that's a big word, but so like, you know.
So just don't say that.
I won't say that. And then all of a sudden they're like, yeah. And then he was like, Cameron. And he's like, he's in the room the whole time, which is kind of messed up. Like you don't, he was like, I mean, he didn't do anything. I didn't say anything wrong, whatever, but it was just sort of like, you know, Cameron Dallas, what if I was like that? Douche. And I didn't say that because I would never say that. He's a good guy. And he totally bombed this. And I was like, hey, Cameron, last time I saw you was in Hawaii. This is weird. And that was that. But I did see he joined LinkedIn. And you know what? Respect to Cameron Dallas for pivoting his career. So he in his heyday was like the king of the pretty boys of Instagram. I mean, he was huge. I had him at Instagram HQ a few times. There's the famous story about he was just complaining about like not being big enough. Meanwhile, he has millions and millions of followers. And he's like, but what about Kylie Jenner? And finally, one of his friends was like, dude, you're not a Kardashian. And like all his friends were like, it's really amazing. There's so many. I have so many Cameron Dallas stories. Not really, but I just stretch them out. That's just,
yeah, you just got a couple. I'm glad.
I'm glad, two or three.
Glad for me and the audience that we heard the new one.
I did see that. Love it. Love LinkedIn, what they're doing. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, good for him. So I thought it was cool to see him. He joined 2 days ago. He said, hey, LinkedIn, cheers to my first post. I've been in the content creator influencer space for 10 years now. I'm amassing over 70 million followers across my social media accounts and being one of the first, quote, social media influencers, end quote. And then he went on to talk a little bit more about himself. And he said, while I love social media, my main focus is now the business world. I recently co-founded and grew a platform, Fanfix, to millions of users and funded a VC fund, TGZ Capital, which he co-founded with another one of your favorite creators, Jake Paul, backing multiple unicorns. I don't know about the multiple unicorns. Maybe Quip is one thing that they've backed, you know, the DTC toothbrush brand.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen them? So yeah, that's probably the biggest success there. Maybe a couple of other unicorns in there too. Who knows? Yeah. But yeah, props to Cameron Dallas for getting on LinkedIn, but more props for LinkedIn for getting Cameron Dallas. I think this is the kind of manifestation of what they've been trying to do over the past, only a few months, really, with getting more creators like him onto the platform.
I think it's cool. I think that that was the perfect person to target because he really is. And Fanfix is the company that I met with. That he's doing all this. He was there. He was at the meeting, guys. So he's really a part of it. I just didn't know. Do I know what he's actually contributing? No, but good for him. I think this is great. Yeah, no, they had Mindy Kaling join the other day and she did a really funny bit where she was talking about really embarrassing stories at her workplace. And she was talking about one of her first writing jobs. She got some praise from like her boss or something. And so she like forwarded it to her parents being like, look who's like killing it at her new job. Except she didn't forward it to her parents. She like literally replied to the boss. Like,
that's awesome.
Mortified. So she's like, tell your embarrassing work stories. And so I'm kind of into it. I'm here for it. I love it. I actually just, I don't want LinkedIn to mess this up with like trying to monetize, to be honest. I keep thinking about that. I'm like, just make it what it is, which is this great place to like share ideas, you know?
But don't you think they have to monetize to incentivize people to post more like videos and stuff? And that's the way that everyone's going? Or do you think they should just opt out of all that?
I kind of, if I'm being honest, want them to opt out of all of it. I think that yes, if they want to, like, depending on what their goals are and how they're going to work this. But like, yeah, they probably do. But I just feel like it's just creates such a mess. Like, think of alternative ways for people to people to have value and also for them to make money. I just don't start with the ads on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I can't, you know?
I guess there are other corollaries that LinkedIn can look at that are really successful in terms of creator engagement, but aren't making money. Like TikTok's even one where you're not making, I guess you're making something there at least a little bit, and maybe that's incentivizing enough. But Twitter, for instance, Twitter's used by all these top creators and they are making a dime from it, but it's integral to their success on other platforms. So maybe LinkedIn could fill that same spot in the business world.
Yeah, I don't know. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, our first big stories is FaZe Clan goes public via a SPAC. So the way they are positioning themselves these days, which I still, if I'm being completely honest, folks, I'm still confused as to like how I'm supposed to think about FaZe Clan. But they said they are an esports and content creation collective, and they are now a publicly traded company. They are on the NASDAQ under FaZe, F-A-Z-E. They opened around $13 per share. Lee Trink, the company CEO, said, we've placed ourselves in the top echelon of a youth culture company. And now, and not just this minute, we have started to shift our focus to monetizing that massive audience. I think that's really critical for this moment of going public. So, you know, I get a little bit like, is this just an MCN? I mean, I know it's different. And are they just doing it right? There's like a lifestyle brand here, which is huge. I mean, they've done collaborations with Champion, Disney, Takashi Murakami, who's an amazing artist. There's a lot of different elements to this business. They want to get into apparently gambling, virtual dining and ghost kitchens, fan clubs, subscription models, et cetera, et cetera. Those are some of the areas they're going to go into. So one other big thing to note is that Trink, the CEO, said that while 50% of the brand's audience is based out of the US, only 5% of its revenue is international. So obviously they feel like there's a huge opportunity there to have more revenue from outside the US. What thinks you of this, Josh?
I think props to them for having some exit liquidity here. The stock's already down a little bit post-launch. It opened at $13 a share. It's now trading at $9-something per share. Mm-hmm. So down a not insignificant amount, but I think that maybe was kind of expected at the get-go.
Yeah.
I'm just worried that this is going to be a proxy for the creator economy and influencers and all of this industry, because it's the only publicly traded company that is mainly that and just that. Like Google, Facebook, Pinterest, Snapchat, they're not all proxies for the creator economies and creators at large and like what kind of influence they have on business, culture, the general public, and more. And so I'm worried that people are going to kind of look at FaZe and judge how well the creator economy is doing based on how the stock's doing, at least superficially a little bit, and use that as a proxy for just the greater industry.
And are you worried about that because you anticipate this not doing well?
Yeah, I just think like, look, it's hard to run a publicly traded company in this environment that got there by way of SPAC.
Yeah.
It's not a great just market timing for this to happen. Hopefully it'll perform really well. And if it does perform really well, I mean, I think that's super bullish for everybody. And then that's great for everyone else in the creator economy too. But I could see people looking at how FaZe is doing and just that being a narrative for like how Patreon's doing or how these other big kind of creator economy unicorns are doing. obviously, if you like take 5 more minutes to look under the hood at any of these companies, you can see they're vastly different. But also, that's not what like people, the headlines necessarily state.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like the CNBC article headline was FaZe Clan goes public in $725 million SPAC, but Gen Z creator economy stock sinks in debut. So those are the kinds of headlines I think we're going to see.
Yeah, but I mean, like, it didn't say, and so is the creator economy a real thing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like colon, you know what I mean? Like, I just feel like so many companies go public and then they immediately, the stock goes down. You know, obviously just what comes to mind immediately is Facebook was like tanked, you know, when it first went public. So, and it wasn't like, I mean, maybe people were saying social media is dead. Who knows what they were saying at the time? I don't remember, but I don't know. Like, I think that, I guess I'm not thinking about this as like the overall, like the commentary that this makes on the entire creator economy. Like, I just feel like FaZe is its own beast. And my problem is, I don't know, I don't really know what the beast is. And so I just have like, I put this in the category of just like skeptical of companies that go public with BS SPAC in general for me. Like that, this seems more like, it's going to, if it goes badly, that's going to be the ramification, is like, you know, trying to go public during this time of, you know, the economy and also via SPAC is maybe like not a great choice. And this makes me think more of Maker being bought by Disney, and like anybody who knew anything, like looked under the hood and they were like, they don't own anything and there's nothing really there. And why didn't anybody look? And I think like Bob Iger, I think was at, you know, Disney at the time, like says that that's like his biggest regret is like buying Maker. To me, it's not a testament that like, oh, the creator economy is a disaster. Maybe people in like, you know, other forms of the media thought that, but it's more just like this model was a disaster. And so that I think that FaZe Clan is really interesting. I think they've done really cool things. I think they've made a name for themselves. Obviously, I just am like, what is this business as a whole? What do they really own? Who are these people? What is this company? And I've kind of never really understood it.
Yeah, I think a not great comparison would be like, imagine Nike pre-IPO that already had deals with a bunch of athletes that were gaining traction in the greater culture. That's kind of what FaZe is. I mean, a little bit different because everybody wears sneakers and FaZe is more of like a culture brand or a merchandise brand too, but it definitely does have some significant cultural impact. Gamers are some of the most popular creators by far these days. FaZe works with a lot of the top gamers. And you can see back a few years ago when there were still lots of like meet and greets and drops and store openings, people would rush to all the FaZe stuff. I mean, they really have this ardent, rabid fan base that really loves their stuff. And the gaming industry isn't getting any smaller. More and more people are getting into gaming. You get into gaming in an early age now and you stay in gaming into your adulthood. And so following all these gamers, I mean, and being part of the industry seems like a pretty good play.
I went to lunch at a fancy restaurant in the Valley on June 27th. And there was like, you know, there was like, not billboards, you know, and they put like the stickers over like construction and it's like kind of billboardy, like on the side of a sidewalk or whatever. And it was like FaZe everywhere.
We call those playbills, Lauren.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Appreciate that. The point is they're everywhere. So, okay, congratulations to FaZe. Excited to see what happens. Next up, this brings us back to like old school OG early days of Creator Upload podcasts, because what I'm about to say, YouTube has announced a new creator liaison. And so when we first launched the podcast, this position, creator liaison, was just formed. It was Matt Koval, who had been a longtime YouTube employee, and he was a creator in and of himself. And I just thought this was hysterical. Like, I go back, people, look at the archives and like, listen to them. Just like think it's kind of silly. And, but he has since left YouTube. We actually saw him at VidCon. We chatted with him for a while. You know, and it's interesting. He talked about, you know, it's actually a really tough position to be in, because what he's trying to do is be, I think what, and I can't speak to this new person, which we'll talk about in a minute, but what I know Matt was trying to do is kind of be the internal advocate for creators at YouTube, as well as communicate externally to creators like, okay, they're getting rid of the dislike button on YouTube. Like, here's what this means. Here's why we're doing it. Let me be somebody who can just be a voice of reason for you, so you can like, whatever. And he received personally a lot of backlash from creators who assumed A, that he was making these decisions, like to the point where it was like actually dangerous, like what he was doing. And I am not speaking for him, but if I were him, I could probably imagine why I'm not in this position again anymore. And so it was just interesting. And so I feel like I appreciate this role more than I did when we first launched and I was making a lot of fun of it, but I also just don't know how effective it is. We'll see. The new person is Rene Ritchie. He has a YouTuber with 328,000 subscribers and more than 50 million views. He's worked as an editorial director at Mobile Nations and a director of product and marketing at Sand Technology before becoming a full-time creator in 2020. He launched doing a video, which was what I thought was funny about the video. It was like Mr. Beast was in it. Justine, who is like OG, who I love, and her sister Jenna used to be her neighbor in Playa Vista, and a few other people kind of like popping their heads in, like, what is this? What does this mean? All this sort of stuff. So thoughts on this, Josh?
So I think it's great that YouTube created this position in the first place, because the only other interaction creators have with YouTube is through their SPMs, which can be great or not so great, depending on who the SPM is. And the SPMs only have so much authority too. Mm-hmm. They can route your concerns internally. They can make a big stink about it. But who knows what those internal politics are like and when they can raise concerns and when they can't.
I have an idea, but go on.
And then there's the Team YouTube Twitter handle, which we actually profiled that handle and the people behind it in an article a few years ago back in 2019. But they have dozens of employees around the world who are answering specific concerns from creators when they voice them and tag the Team YouTube handle. And so that's more of a like tech support, or there's a big issue or something that needs to be resolved in the near future, that YouTube has a way for creators to interact and connect with someone at the company and the platform itself. And I think the creator liaison role was defined as this like way for creators to better understand the inner workings of YouTube and YouTube to better understand the inner workings of creators. But in its first go, it did that to a certain extent. But I think what happened was, because Matt Koval was a creator several years ago and a relatively successful creator several years ago, but then was internally at the company for so long, you can understand how, not that he would side with the company, but just like it creates a different kind of structure around this role when you're a company employee who's trying to advocate on behalf of creators outside the company, rather than being a creator on the outside of the company who's brought in to advocate.
So you like this because they didn't do an internal hire. That's what you're liking about this.
I think it's great that they took a creator who's been successful on the platform, who's well-liked, who's thoughtful, who also you can tell by all the people he got in his intro video, which is like very well done, because all these different types of people, from Marquez to Mr. Beast to iJustine, who still kills it on YouTube, by the way.
By the way, I am a huge Justine fan. She's amazing.
She's great. They're all giving their tacit support here, I guess enthusiastic support here, by appearing in the video with Rene and vouching for him. And I think he's going to be able to command a bigger role in this space just because he's a creator, because he does it every day, because he talks to creators all the time, and then shout with more authority at YouTube for what creators need because he's not in the system for a decade.
I think that's interesting. I was a little bit, and this is going to be a controversial question, I was a little bit concerned because, you know, he's not the youngest of gentlemen I've seen. And so I was like, and a lot of creators are quite young. And I was like, are they going to like respect this dude, or they're just going to think, yo, here's this old dude that's like trying to talk to me? I mean, I think it's a legitimate question, but I think it's fair to say like having Mr. Beast in the video is giving him a little level of cred that I think people are going to like, maybe like be like, okay, this guy's legit.
Right, totally. And you need an adult in the room. These are adult problems that need adult answers.
I don't disagree. I'm just saying, you know, people are quick to judge. You know what I'm saying? And so, but that's interesting, because I actually was thinking about this, like, why didn't they hire somebody, you know, do somebody internally again? But like, I'm not mad at your theory. I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, I think they needed to after that. They'd be like, oh, we should get a creator to do this.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
And they found a good one who's older, who has a bunch of regular work experience under their belt at companies that aren't small.
Yeah.
What I like to say is that dealing with any big organization, and I've dealt with YouTube a lot, but I'm sure this applies to other big organizations too, is like dealing with Europe, where...
Just like as a whole?
Yes, where it's one defined entity,
sure.
But there are an innumerable amount of factions within that entity that all have different KPIs, performance metrics, goals, hates, wants, needs, and more, and that don't necessarily talk to each other. Like, when's the last time Portugal talked to Greece? I'm sure they do some business together.
I feel like Portugal and Greece are talking. I feel like Ireland and Greece aren't talking.
But, they probably don't have the same goals, nor should they. And so that's how dealing with a big organization like YouTube can be at times. Mm. And so having someone who, again, is on the outside of that infrastructure who can like shout at everybody or get everybody's attention cross-country, I feel like is a good play.
Interesting. All right. Well, Renee, first of all, Renee, official invitation to come on Creator Upload podcast. We'd love to talk to you. Never could get Matt on. Maybe that's because he was too part of the man. And now we've got now we have someone who's not like you. He's not the man. So, you know.
No, I think Matt did a great job. He had the Sisyphusian task of dealing with creators' problems a lot.
When you use words like Sisyphus.
And I think Renee might be able to approach it from a different angle.
I get it. I'm not mad at Matt. We chatted. We were hanging out backstage. We're, you know, like we did. I'm just saying. You were saying he was like the man, and I'm just saying Renee's not. So like maybe we'll get him on.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing Josh.
But got it. Thank you.
That's what you're saying. Okay. Quickly, want to get to a few shopping updates. So first of all, Shopify. Got a new integration on YouTube. It lets creators place products across their channels. So YouTube is rolling out an e-commerce integration that lets creators display products across their Shopify stores, across their channels and content. They've had a partnership with Shopify for years, but it's building upon that. And it gives creators the option to include shelves of their Shopify vended merch at the end of their videos and section below their videos and live streams as pinned products in live stream. Very interesting. I think this is cool. I've never heard of or seen like huge numbers from the YouTube shelf, frankly. I think it's been a very subpar product. I think it's sort of like ticked a box at best, but this will be interesting to see because this is sort of more organization with it and a bit more prominence with it. So I'm very curious to see if this does well, especially recently, you know, we heard about TikTok really scaling back on live shopping. Quickly, and then I want to hear Josh's opinion on these. Instagram is now letting you shop in your DMs. So Zuckerberg announced on Instagram, you can now buy products from small businesses and track your order and chat on Instagram in the US, pay with MetaPay and check out in a few taps. So despite TikTok rolling back other platforms, going deeper, discuss.
One, TikTok has tried to come out and say that report that they were going to no longer test out live shopping in the US wasn't quite accurate, with kind of the caveat that they never said that they were actually going to. And so they're not stopping anything. They never said they were going to start.
Oh, so they're like, we're not doing it because we never said we were going to do it. You weren't even listening. Who am I? Who am I right now? I'm TikTok. Who am I right now? TikTok.
That's great.
That was a really good impression from TikTok.
That was perfect. And so who knows? They may still come out with it sometime in the not so distant future. I think they have to.
They're going to do it if it works. And if it keeps not working, they ain't going to do it. Like, it's not that complicated. The question is, why has it not worked? That's the big question, because all like signs point to the fact that it should work.
The Instagram shopping in the DMs, I think, is kind of awesome. It might be on the cover of No Dumb Magazine, or at least a feature within it. But I also think not, because it's not that intuitive a thing that people would want to do necessarily. Mm-hmm. But you can then presumably show stuff to your friends. You're a creator. You can send DMs to a bunch of people. You're a store. You can send DMs to a bunch of people. You can shop from right there. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really cool feature to keep people still on the platform and engaged. Also just ease of use for the consumer too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then agree with you on this YouTube Shopify integration that the shelf on YouTube, I've never heard, except in extreme cases, of being like a huge moneymaker for creators.
It's just not.
The exception that maybe proves the rule is Lucas the Spider, which just like went bonkers, I think, partly due to that integration early on with Spring. And they sold like so much merchandise when Lucas the Spider first launched. Still a great channel, by the way. Mm-hmm. But you know who's really bullish about the Shopify YouTube collaboration?
Tell me.
Shopify is really bullish about this.
I was going to say Shopify, but I thought that was too, like too no duh, but like maybe.
Shopify's director of product, marketplaces, and creators, Amir Kabara, talked to Reuters and said that the partnership with YouTube would help boost conversion rate and in turn the gross merchandise volume, a key success metric for the company. Mm-hmm. Which totally makes sense if it works. And it could be just different marketing conditions at large, but Shopify stock is up like the past 2 days since the announcement.
It's yeah, it had gone down. It had gone down. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm waiting for somebody to get this right. We're going to have Max Benader. He's actually going to co-host with Josh. Very excited because I'm going to be off gallivanting in August, as one should. And he is the co-founder of Orca, which is a live shopping company. And actually, like, he posted something on LinkedIn that I'll make sure I want you to ask him about, Josh. Yesterday, there was a headline, just kind of I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, live shopping is down. And he just kind of wrote, like, this is categorically, like, not true. And, like, we are proving that we have, like, quadrupled our revenue, and like, people are just confused. It's like, it's just not everybody's gonna win. And I was like, you know what, Max, do you. All right. So
yeah, I'm excited to have him on and talk about that. Well, you're off doing whatever you're gonna
whatever that's in a couple of weeks. Yeah. So I'm getting excited about that, guys. So let's talk about the key to selling on social. What do we think, Josh?
Well, first of all, anyone wanting to monetize their content and create products for their followers has got to get on Spring. It's a 100% free platform for anyone to create and launch absolutely anything instantly. There's over 180 products to choose from. You got digital downloads, hundreds of print-on-demand products, and even NFTs.
Let's double-click on that word instant. The creator economy and trends on social media can change in a matter of seconds. If something happens in your community, you have to be able to act fast. That's the beauty of this platform.
Right? So imagine you hit 100,000 followers on TikTok. In the comments, people are asking for a celebratory piece of merch to commemorate the moment. You can leverage the speed and ease of the Spring platform to offer that product like 5 minutes later.
Best of all, Spring always has a finger on the pulse of social commerce. There's new trending products added every season. They know what's selling right now and what your fans want to see. For example, Spring launched these trending products recently for you to create over summer. Notebooks, custom plushies, jersey and swim shorts, bucket hats, desk mats. We could go on.
Want to jump in and start creating? I know you do. Head to Spring. That's SPRI.NG and sign up.
Okay, Josh, any uploads or downloads for you?
Lauren, I think this might be a first time ever where a creator has been a guest host on the late night TV talk show. Mark Rober.
Oh my God, I watched his monologue. Yeah, do it. I love it.
Took over for Jimmy Kimmel Live.
So good.
And what do you think?
He's kind of handsome. He was all dressed up. And like, I've never seen him dressed up. He's kind of handsome. He's charming. He's like super charming and handsome. I loved it.
He is charming and handsome. He has over 22 million subscribers on his YouTube channel. He stepped in for Jimmy Kimmel to guest host an episode of the ABC talk show. And he also used his Jimmy Kimmel Live appearance to promote Rev Engineers, an upcoming Discovery Channel produced by Kimmel.
You know, I can't help myself that when I see creators in these sort of things that I'm like proud and they do well, even though like I don't know Mark Rober, I'm going to be very honest, but I just feel like, how cool is this? And he was very tongue in cheek about like, nobody here knows who I am. Like, it was great. And he did a whole bit at the farmer's market in LA, like with like old people, young people and all the, you know, grandmas and, you know, the kids. And like, I was like, oh, the grandma doesn't know who I am. And the kid's like, oh my God, this is Mark Rober. And it was adorable. It was great. I was into it.
Yeah, I love it. It's cool to see this stuff happen.
One more quick upload, hot off the presses. Cameron Dallas coming in hot. Fanfix, that startup that I told you I met with, and Cameron Dallas bombed me in it, was acquired today, or announced it was acquired today, by a company called Super Ordinary in something like an eight-figure deal. So Cameron Dallas is coming to play and he is not messing around. Very cool and exciting. Good for him.
Yep, good just in time.
I'm excited to be on LinkedIn to flex about when somebody buys creator upload for eight figures. Josh, I think we did it.
Lauren, I think that's it. I'll see you flexing on LinkedIn, trying to get that next gig as a YouTube creator liaison.
A girl can dream.
If not there, next week on Creator Upload. Today's show is produced by Lauren Schnipper, me, Joshua Cohen, and Carmen Lissette Suarez. It's edited by Jason Kang, and original music is by London Bridge, who you can check out on Instagram at London Bridge Music. Make sure you subscribe to Creator Upload wherever you're listening to this podcast. While you're there, give us a rating, leave us a comment. If you want to talk, hit us up at info@creatorupload.com. We really love getting your emails. If you like our show, please recommend it to a friend. If you love it, recommend it to everybody. Thanks for listening to Creator Upload, and we will be back next week.